Before this episode starts, I want to let you know that our Here Be Monsters live show is coming to Los Angeles. Bethany Denton will be there, I will be there, our live show sound engineer Joe Morgan will be there, and hopefully you will be there too. Our live show is called Terrible Resonance, and it's about infrasounds, which are these subversive bassy tones that are so low that they must be felt rather than heard. We're performing Sunday, October 18th, at the CineFamily at the historic Silent Movie Theater in West Hollywood. This is going to be our biggest show yet, and we're honored to do it as a part of SpectreFest 2015. Terrible Resonance in Los Angeles is a co-production of KCRW and SpectreVision. So get your tickets early. They're on sale now, and you can find all of the information on our website at hbmpodcast.com/live, or you can just click the black banner at the top of any page. We're looking forward to it, and we'll see you at the show.
From the independent producer project of KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
Can you just close your eyes? And then, was that your right hand? Can you just go from the in between your eyes to the back of your head and just describe what lumps you feel and where it's flat and where it's curved and all of that?
I think it's pretty egg-shaped.
Right above my eyes, my forehead is fairly flat.
All right, I have a hairline at the top of my forehead. I think it's fairly average.
Front part of which is flat and smooth, and then...
It's like just the top of my scalp. It's got the thin hair you can see through. It might just be a lighting thing.
Sometimes I think I've got kind of an antelope face.
Thin hair.
If I go towards the back.
And the back goes down, and...
A bump.
I used to have a cowlick, whatever that is.
I feel like if you photoshopped my head and my face onto the body of an antelope, I think it would look hilarious. But also kind of like it fit there.
Sid, apparently this isn't normal. I don't know if you like are interested in feeling, but there's like a...
Oh, that?
Yeah. Do you know what that is? Do you have one of those?
Yeah, it's just not as big.
Oh.
But for some reason, people generally choose bald eagles.
So now we're back into the part where there is still some shortcut hair.
And on the sides, it's a little bit of sideburns.
As it comes around to the front transition, there's this abrupt ridge.
Hey, you gotta do an episode about like... protuberances on the back of your head.
Between the side and the forehead.
Forehead. Hairline. Egg-shaped.
Protuberances.
Flat and smooth. Scalp.
Thin.
Back.
Ridge. Cowlick.
Bump.
Head.
Hair. Face.
Sideburns.
Bump.
Bald eagles.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about...
A peacock's plumage.
The podcast about...
The unknown.
Every day I look in the mirror and I take a moment to pull my hair back tight against my scalp. With my hair lying flat like this, I can see the shape of my skull, the lumps and the flat spots, and I can almost imagine what I will look like when all of my hair falls out. When people walk past me on the street, they have no idea that I'm losing my hair. But I know that I am, because for my whole life I've had this mole hidden about 3 inches above my left eye on my forehead. And as each year passes, my hairline gets closer and closer to that mole, and I use it to mark the progress of my slow hair loss. Sometimes I think about how people will see me differently when I have no hair. Sometimes I imagine myself as a balding man, standing next to my archetype of a pedophile. I try to see what's physically different between him and me, and it's not much. This daily ritual that I have with my hair, with the mole, with the imagination, I don't think it's particularly normal or particularly healthy. In fact, I worry that it's some kind of obsessive behavior, or some kind of latent body image issues, or some kind of societal standard of beauty that somewhere in my life I unconsciously internalized. When I imagine the rest of my life as a bald person, I get caught on this logical seesaw. On one side of the seesaw sits a version of me that's narcissistic and vain. He's full of heartwarming affirmations, and he says to me, "You'll be beautiful when you're bald. You'll look different, but you have a nice head shape, you've got great eyes, you've got great teeth. People will love you despite your lack of hair." And then on the other end of this seesaw sits a dysphoric version of myself, and he says, "Fuck beauty, fuck society. Becoming less attractive is just fine because it weeds out the assholes that are too shallow to look further than your scalp." And usually I just leave it at that. These two competing visions of a future that used to be distant. But I'm 26 now, and most men in my family don't make it past 30 with hair. It's tempting to yet again sweep my anxiety under the rug, but that's the wrong thing to do. After all, this show is about finding fears and chasing them and asking them questions. So, I found three bald people that I respect deeply, and I asked them to sit down with me and tell me stories about how they lost it, how they fought it, and how they've dealt with it, their wishes and their regrets. I need you to introduce yourself.
I'm Brian Ittman.
You're Brian Ittman what?
I'm Brian Ittman, Jeff's brother. You know, about 5'10", blue eyes, beard, bald guy.
How old were you when that happened?
19 or 20. Quite early, really.
When was the first moment then you suspected something was happening with your hair?
I think it would have been late freshman year. I remember it being surprising, being in the dorm and kind of looking at my hair and realizing that looks thinner than it used to look. On a college campus, you're surrounded by 18 to 22-year-olds. 99% of them have no sign of baldness. That was a little tough, I think, just looking different than the people I was around. That's the distressing thing about it. You don't know, like, is it just going to stop now and hold where it is, or how much more is going to fall out? That's, I think, the most difficult mental part about it. Within half a year of me noticing it, it must have been apparent to Mom and Dad, because they bought me a little bottle of the Costco brand Rogaine, 4 or 5 inch bottle, with a little dropper in it. And the idea being that you just kind of sucked up a little bit of this liquid into the dropper and then dropped it on the top of your head. Clearly worked real well.
How long did you do that for?
A couple months at least.
And what changed?
It did nothing.
Absolutely nothing?
Nothing that I could see.
When you were losing your hair, was there ever any point where you were like, I am going to be less attractive to the opposite sex?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that was troublesome about it.
Did you ever date anyone while you were losing your hair?
No.
Did you want to?
Yes, but I don't know that the hair was really the issue.
What was the issue?
No comment.
At what point did you decide to start shaving your head?
I wouldn't call what I have a shaved head. I kind of have a very close-cut horse collar. That I started doing right after I graduated. I'd been going to the barber and having them cut it, trim it fairly short on the sides, and then just pretty much leaving what was on the top alone, which in retrospect kind of looked ridiculous. So eventually I decided it was kind of time to come to terms with it, and just started cutting it myself at that point.
How do you shave your head?
So I typically will do this in my bathroom, turn on the clippers, and I have Reiko, my wife, help me out with this. I'll cut the first half of it, and then she'll cut the back half, which is a little harder to see.
Is there anything I should ask you about you and Reiko?
Is there anything you were wanting to ask? Or?
Did you ever have any self-doubt about whether or not she would find you attractive?
She never gave me reason to have self-doubt about that, which is something I'm very grateful for.
I was going to ask you if you had any advice or suggestions or like hard lessons that you learned that other people don't need to repeat as they lose their hair.
If I was going back and doing this again, I would have cut my hair short sooner than I did. Probably caused myself more distress than I needed to. Whether it's changed my core person is a tough question, but I do think that there are some advantages to losing my hair early that I wouldn't have expected at the time. Specifically, that I think it was easier to come to terms with. I feel like in some ways I was lucky to just be done with that part of it in 3 or 4 years and be able to kind of move on.
I have this friend named Eric Nucci. Eric's in his early 20s, just graduated from college, and he has this short, medium brown, blondish hair that's thin enough so that it's nearly transparent in certain kinds of light. I ran into Eric one day in the city, and I immediately put my foot in my mouth. I think I said, "Hey Eric, I know this is a weird question, but I'm working on this story about hair loss, and I wanted to talk to you about your balding." And he laughed at me, and he told me that he wasn't actually balding at all. But he said that he would talk to me anyways, and so we decided to meet up the next day. Our interview was on a warm summer night, and we sat in his dining room with the front door wide open and we drank a few beers. He had a picture of himself pulled up on his computer. In the picture, he was in 7th grade, but he looked different from any 7th grader I'd ever seen before. And I realized that his hair had been thin his whole life. It was just a genetic thing that he got from his mom. In our interview, I tried to get him to explain how he survived middle and high school, and I asked him for advice. Do you think you spend more or less time than the average person thinking about the way you look?
Maybe average. Possibly less. I think about it. Don't think I obsess about it.
Do you remember the first time that you looked in the mirror and was like, "I think my hair's different than other people's"?
I think it was probably 4th grade or something. I mean, kids are mean. I don't know a better way to explain it. I think you know what I'm talking about. But like, at some point, some kid, I don't remember, might have been Tom, might have been Michael, somebody in my class like just noticed this and decided that, I don't know, make fun of me about it. The climax of it was like getting the nickname of cue ball, bald head, shiny like a cue ball on like a billiards table. And I ever talked to my mom about it, and she just, like, she has thin hair, and she's, I think she is now balding, but at that point I don't think she was. But I had really thin hair, and you could like sort of see through her scalp, even though she had hair there. But it's just like, that's just the genes you got, that's your hair. So like, don't care about things that don't matter, you know? I don't think it lasted more than a year. But as much as I feel like I know lots of things logically, doesn't mean that I feel them. I don't feel like I really often feel very confident about my self-image. I feel like I achieve non-vanity by not giving a shit.
Have you ever used any...
No.
Just no.
Well, my mom would have it. She would have the like hair thickening one. But it was like, it was expensive shampoo, but it was still cheap shampoo. It didn't have chemicals in it. It wasn't whatever. So I'd like use this stuff that my mom bought. I didn't ever notice any difference. It was all placebo. Like, every once in a while, I'd be like, "Well, it's probably better because I use the shampoo." Like, I don't know. So I used it when it was available. I never bought it. And every time I'd go, I think like about once a year, I'll go up to Rudy's and get like a real person haircut. I don't know. It does make you feel better. And I think that's also mostly placebo. Like, "Oh, it's just a little bit better trim." And I always tell them, this. I'll tell my insecurities, be like, I've got thin hair. I'd love it if you could, like, make it look better. And now at the end, they'll always be like, do you use product? I'll be like, no. And they'll be like, well, I really suggest this. This is only, like, $10. You know, like, I don't want to add more things like that to my life because just not the person I am.
That insecurity that you once had as a child, is it all the way gone, or is there still something
there? I think that'd be lying if I've given off that idea. Of course not. I'm a normal person. I've just, I got a lot of ways to cope.
Let's play God for a second here. If you had three choices, right? The first choice would be leave everything as it was. Second choice is slowly lose your hair in your 30s. Third choice is have a full head of hair until you die. No consequences for any of the choices. You could go back and rewind your life and live it any way you wanted. Which of those three paths would you pick and why?
I feel like it's cheating, but I have two answers because I've, like, prided myself in not having any regrets. And so, like, why would I change? But no, a full head of hair, that sounds nice. It's just one less thing to worry about. And it's one thing that you could, like, take pride in and be like, yeah, just like this. I feel like a really nice, like, full set of hair that you could, like, style and do different things with and stuff. It would be like a peacock's plumage, you know, like it's like this cool thing you get to show off. I'm like, hey, look at this. Something people can like appreciate or to like do stuff with, like situations I've been a part of where like a girl will like think some guy has really nice hair and it'll be wet or something. And I just like start playing with it and stuff, like do different stuff. I'm like, that's an experience I'm never going to get because my hair is not fun to play with. It doesn't do anything. And so, you know, that'd be pleasant, but not heartbroken over it.
Do you have any advice for me as someone who's used to having hair, who for the vast majority of my life is going to have no hair?
Don't worry about it. Because you're saying this is a fear, which means that it's illogical. I guess it really just depends how much you want to care about it, right? So just don't sweat the small stuff. It's advice that no one really takes verbally, but everybody learns it eventually. So just like give it as much attention as it's due.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's great. I think it's a good place to end this.
What if science could give you what nature didn't? A thickening ingredient that penetrates the hair fiber and helps increase its diameter from within. Hair looks thicker, thicker, thicker. Luxurious body and bounce, bounce, bounce.
More than beautiful.
The science behind thicker hair.
And you're worth it.
I have this friend named Carrie. In the past, I've described her as a badass. I got this impression of her because she rides her bike fast and wears a lot of black, sleeveless t-shirts. But mostly I called her a badass because I've only ever known her with a completely bald head, shaved right down to the skin. But now I regret my choice in words because they assumed a lot about her that wasn't true. It wasn't until she taught me about trichotillomania that I realized that her hairstyle wasn't a choice.
I'm Carrie McCarty. I've had trichotillomania since I was 12 years old. I think pulling for me was a good way to mitigate my anxiety.
What does it feel like to pull out a strand of hair?
It's funny because a lot of people that I talk to about this assume that it hurts, but it doesn't hurt me. It feels good. It's kind of this like tension and then release. Sometimes it would be conscious. Sometimes it would feel like there was a warm patch on my scalp, and that's generally where I would target pulling from. And then if I'd pulled hard enough to, you know, sever blood vessel connection to the hair, then there'd be a little dot of red at the tip. And that's how you knew that that hair would never grow back. It's never something that you want to do, you know? It's just something that you have to do. I would vacuum a lot, and the vacuum would just clog with hair, and I'd have to pull it out. And it was disgusting. So I started trying to clear my carpet off before I'd vacuum, and I could do that pretty well by just running my hands over the surface of the carpet, and I just collect, you know, seemingly enough hair to make a whole wig for myself right off the carpet. And it would, you know, doing that for 5 minutes will sting your hands a little bit, just make them tingle. So I'd just be just kind of sitting there with all of my hair in my hands, and it makes it a lot more real. You don't always notice how much you're pulling out when you're just pulling out a couple of pieces at a time, but then when you have it all right there in front of you, it's a lot. It was pretty overwhelming. My earliest memory of being aware that it was a problem was my mother taking me to get my hair cut and the barber calling her over and saying, "Look at this." Apparently I had a spot at the back of my head that was about the size of a silver dollar. It just had no hair. When they asked if I'd done it, I denied it because I was embarrassed. I was ashamed of it. Then later in the car, my mom asked me again, you know, if I'd been pulling my hair out, and I said yes. My mom thought that I was doing it for attention. And my mom and I have, like, a pretty rocky relationship. I don't know. It's a rough time.
Did you feel ashamed?
Yeah, there's a huge element of shame. Back when my parents used to do home videos of us, I saw a recording where you could see these little tufts behind my ears that were just sticking out because they were only maybe an inch long and the rest of my hair was, you know, a good foot. So you could tell the parts that were growing back. You could tell that there were parts that were shorter. But I was very careful. But then in college, there was this one time, and this was my freshman year of college, where my girlfriend and I were snuggling and she reached up and like ran her hand through my hair. And at that time I had been pulling a lot out in the front, like right under my bangs. I saw her face change. I saw her see where I'd pulled my hair out. And, you know, so I kind of shut down and moved her hand away, and we never talked about it. Not once. Sophomore year, I pulled out half my hair. I was having to wear headscarves. That's when I decided to take a hardship withdrawal from school and get a job and find somewhere to live in town, doing something to try to take care of it. I started working as a late-night diner waitress at a local diner to earn money to afford therapy and to afford my rent.
I want to know when you decided to shave your hair off and why you made that decision.
I think that I was really tired of looking in the mirror and only being able to see my bald spots. I just didn't want to deal with it anymore. And the pressure, the actual physical pressure of like a hat or scarf pressing against the remaining hair was really, really uncomfortable. Just everything about it was uncomfortable. And I was just like, okay, today is the day. I'm going to go to the barbershop and have them shave my hair. So I did that. I got up, made breakfast, walked over to the Golden Pantry, bought my first packet of cigarettes, smoked one, went in, got my head shaved, came out, smoked another one, walked home, cried a lot. It was healthy.
I like the pacing of how you say that. You put just as much emphasis on the two cigarettes that you smoked as you did having your head shaved. And it makes it a very compact and neat story, but what did the barber say?
Well, she asked why I was doing it, and I explained. She didn't seem to understand all that well, but she seemed willing to try, and she recommended me a wig shop. I think she shaved it at like a 2 or almost a 3. It was still pretty long, and I was still not super happy with it. So I went home, and I took my, you know, safety razor for shaving my legs, and I shaved the rest of it down.
And what did you think when you looked in the mirror?
I just thought, I'm going to look like this for a very long time.
Why were you crying?
Because it felt like giving up, and it felt like failure, and it felt like defeat. And that's kind of what it felt like every single time after that I had tried to grow my hair out and then had to shave it down again.
How many years ago was that?
That first time was... That was October of 2011, so I guess four years, yeah. When I was working at the diner, So we got some colorful characters in there. People would make assumptions about my sexuality. I had one very irate table, and I was escorting one of them out, and I was like, hey, listen, if you don't leave, we'll have to call the police. He just, like, turned to me, and he was like, I don't give a shit, you fucking dyke bitch. You know, it's just stuff like that.
Some people think that I'm doing it for feminist reasons or for political reasons. There are assumptions about how I will react to authority or the kind of jobs that I'm qualified for.
When I was at the diner, it didn't matter when I was working the late night shift, if I had my head covered or not, or if I had a wig on or not. But when I started working the dinner shift, which was more families, I was told that I should keep my head covered or wear a wig so as not to make people uncomfortable. And wigs were still fun at that time.
Like, do you want that? Do you look at people with long hair and be like, I want that?
You know, sometimes I do, but that's also pretty far outside of my reality right now. So I don't think about it very often. I just know that I can't do wigs, because even though they're fun and even though sometimes I look great in them, like, they just, at this point, they just feel really dishonest. You know, when I'd first started shaving my head, the first Thanksgiving that I had with my family, my mom asked that I keep a hat on or a scarf on the whole time. Even like a trip to Walmart, they'd be like, oh, you should put a hat on, you should cover your head up. And they're like, well, you don't want to make people uncomfortable. So I think that a lot of their concern was how people would react to me. But then sometimes I think that it was also a fear of how people would feel about them. That's not such a problem anymore. I think they've gotten used to it. I know my dad doesn't care one way or the other if I have hair or not. But I am my mother's only daughter, and I can't help but think sometimes that she's a little bit disappointed in how things turned out.
I think if we'd been able to catch it earlier, you know, back when I was 12 or 13, things might have turned out a little bit differently, but at this point, I'm actually pretty positive that I'm never going to have hair again.
Are you bitter about that?
Sometimes. Sometimes I'm incredibly bitter that my parents couldn't help me more, or didn't believe me when I said that I couldn't control it, or that I wasn't doing it on purpose.
When I look in the mirror, I don't even really look at my hair anymore.
Because there's something funny about losing your hair where you just really come to terms with the rest of the features on your face.
My anxiety about losing my hair was a little unwarranted in hindsight. I've just been doing this for so long that I feel like it's almost a part of my identity now. And if nothing else, it makes me very recognizable around town.
When I look in the mirror now, I don't get as upset as I used to. It's not that I don't wish that I wasn't losing my hair slowly, but now, with the perspectives of Carrie, Eric, and my brother, I find the whole process a lot less daunting. And so I'm left with the words of my uncle. It was about 10 years ago at a family gathering when I straight up asked him what it was like to be bald. And with a deadpan expression hiding a sly grin, all he said back to me was, "Well, Jeff, it's less hair to comb and more face to wash."
Oh, I understand. Now I understand.
I care deeply about the three people who I interviewed for this episode. My brother, Brian Emman, lives in Boise, Idaho, along with his wife, Reiko. Brian is a mechanical engineer, and he works to make heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems in buildings more efficient. Eric Nucci is an engineer as well. He just graduated from college, and last I checked, he's looking for a job, and he's a great guy, so consider hiring him. And Carrie McCarty is a fish biologist and bike messenger who currently lives in Athens, Georgia, but might move back to Seattle someday. She's also the person who cut a tumor out of my arm on her back porch last summer. We made a little radio piece about it. It's called Psychic Blob, and you can Google that if you want, but not if you have a weak stomach. Again, that's Psychic Blob. Just search for it. This episode of Here Be Monsters was produced by me, Jeff Etman, along with help from Bethany Denton and Nick White, who is our KCRW editor. Remember to buy your tickets for our upcoming live show in LA on October 18th. hbmpodcast.com/live. Also on our website, you can see a picture of my brother hiking in the mountains, also that picture of Eric from 7th grade, and also a picture of Carrie that I photoshopped onto the body of an antelope. The track picture for today's episode comes from my new favorite app. It's called Make Me Bald. Just take a picture of yourself or your friend and shave off all of their hair, and then you can add a mustache back on. We'll link it up on our website. Again, we're hbmpodcast.com. Music on the show came from Monster Rally, Lucky Dragons, The Black Spot, Flowers, and Sarocell. Here Be Monsters is proud to be a part of the independent producer project of KCRW. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.